Hikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Hikatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a word, a concept really that almost everyone thinks they know, but it's, well, profoundly misunderstood. We're talking about paganism.
Paganism. Yeah, it's a word that gets thrown around a lot. You hear it used for anything non-Christian or maybe some kind of ancient nature religion. But what was it, really?
And more importantly, how did one simple Latin word come to define, you know, half of the world's religious history?
To get to the bottom of that, we went straight to the expert, historian Owen Davies, and his work, especially his books Paganism, A Very Short Introduction, and Paganism, Enduring Spirit and Historical Transformation.
So our mission today is to figure out why this label even exists, how it was created in the first place, and how that act of creation has shaped, well, everything.
And you might be surprised to find that the history of paganism is really a story about power and who gets to write the definitions. So if you're ready to separate the real history from the romantic myths, let's dive in.
Okay, so let's start with the author. Who is Owen Davies, and why is he the right person to guide us through this?
Well, he's exactly the kind of rigorous scholar you need for a topic this messy. He's a professor of social history at the University of Hertfordshire.
And he's a leading voice on the history of magic, witchcraft, popular belief, that kind of thing.
He really is. He's written books like Grimoires, a history of magic books, and even the Oxford Illustrated History of Witchcraft and Magic. But what's really key here is his approach.
What makes it so distinctive?
He's a social historian, so he's not just looking at theology or old ruins. He's interested in the lived experience. How did actual people live their beliefs? What were the folk traditions, the fears, the stuff that makes up real culture?
So he's less interested in the gods on Mount Olympus and more in the person in a village in Roman Britain and what they were actually doing.
Exactly. He's on what he calls a demystification project. He wants to strip away all the layers of, you know, romanticism and negative labels that have been piled on top of these beliefs for centuries.
This brings us right to the central idea of his work. And honestly, this is the big aha moment.
Yeah.
If you take away only one thing from this deep dive, it should be this.
Go on.
Davies argues that paganism is not, and never was, a single continuous religion that's existed since the dawn of time.
That's it. That's the core thesis. It's a historically constructed concept. The word pagan was an exonym, a label invented from the outside.
Invented by early Christians, right?
Yeah.
To basically lump together and subordinate every other polytheistic faith that wasn't theirs.
Precisely. And the word itself tells the whole story. It comes from the Latin paganus.
Which means?
It literally means country dweller or civilian.
Wow. So it wasn't even a religious word to begin with.
Not at all. Christians basically co-opted it to create an other. It was a pejorative term. It implied that these old faiths were unsophisticated, you know, only found in the rural backwaters, away from the enlightened Christian cities.
For the civilian part, as in they weren't soldiers of Christ.
Exactly. It's a power move hidden inside a definition. You take this incredible diversity, Roman state gods, Celtic nature worship, Egyptian deities, and you erase all that complexity by sticking one label on all of them.
So Davies' work completely reframes religious history. It's not this neat linear story of primitive beliefs evolving into advanced ones.
No, it's a messy, complex tapestry of coexistence, conflict, and maybe most importantly, syncretism. It's a story of negotiation between belief systems.
And he traces this label's journey from its invention through a strange survival in the Christian world, its revival by the Romantics, and then finally, its reclamation by modern movements like Wicca.
So let's start at the beginning, the invention of the category. Davies is crystal clear on this. Before Christianity rose to power, nobody called themselves a pagan.
Right, you were a Roman or a Celt or a Greek. You had your gods, your customs. That was your identity.
Then you get Christian writers like Augustine who start building this idea of a single pagan other. They define it as chaotic, immoral, idolatrous.
Which then gives them the justification to suppress it. It's a classic case of defining your enemy.
And this wasn't just happening in books. It was a very public, very political fight. Davies highlights the Altar of Victory debate in the late 4th century.
The Altar of Victory. What exactly was that? Why was it such a big deal?
It was a statue in the Roman Senate House, and it symbolized Rome's long history of success, its tradition, its divine favor. For a traditional Roman senator like Symmachus, removing it was unthinkable.
But the Christian Bishop Ambrose, he saw it differently.
He saw it as a symbol of idolatry that had no place in a Christian empire. And well, Ambrose won the debate. The altar was removed. It was a clear signal that the political power had shifted for good.
And that political shift led to laws. Emperors like Theodosius started closing temples, banning public sacrifices.
But a law is one thing. Changing what people do in their own homes, that's another. Davies really stresses that this was not an overnight replacement.
So how do we know that? What's the evidence?
A lot of it is archaeology. He uses the example of a Romano-British villa at a place called Wallingstone. The family who lived there were clearly navigating this change.
How so?
They built a Christian chapel in their home, but there's also clear evidence that they continued older pagan practices like water worship right alongside it. People were hedging their bets, blending traditions.
They didn't just flip a switch.
Yeah.
And that realization that you couldn't just eradicate these deep-seated customs seems crucial. It led the church to change its strategy from pure suppression to something more subtle.
That's the key, strategic accommodation. Pope Gregory the Great is famous for this. He sent a letter to his missionaries in Britain.
And what did it say?
He basically told them, don't destroy the pagan temples, just smash the idols, sprinkle some holy water, and turn them into churches.
And the festivals too, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Don't ban the winter solstice feast, just rebrand it as Christmas. Turn the festival of Samhain into All Saints Day. It's brilliant, really. You keep the familiar rhythms of life, the sacred places, but you put them under new management.
Which is the very definition of syncretism. But this brings us to a huge myth that Davies wants to correct. The idea of an unbroken, secret pagan religion surviving in the shadows.
Yes, the survivalist thesis. It was made famous by a writer named Margaret Murray, who argued that the European witch trials were actually the persecution of a secret pre-Christian fertility cult.
Davies says that theory is, well, it's largely discredited now, isn't it?
It is. It imposes this organized structure that just wasn't there. But he contrasts that myth with cases of genuine folk survival. And the best example is the Benedonti.
The good walkers from Italy.
Yes, from Friuli in northeastern Italy. These were people investigated by the Inquisition in the 16th and 17th centuries, and they claimed that their spirits left their bodies while they slept to go fight evil witches for the harvest.
And this was a pre-Christian belief.
Absolutely. It had all the hallmarks of a very old shamanic tradition that had somehow managed to survive for centuries, even if it was misunderstood by the inquisitors. It shows the incredible resilience of these deep spiritual ideas.
So it's about distinguishing the historical fact of folk resilience from the romantic myth of a unified secret religion.
Precisely. And after the witch trials, things start to shift again. The Enlightenment and the Romantic era change how people think about the past.
How so?
The Renaissance had already started treating the old gods as allegories, as art, not as demons. But then the Romantics, reacting against industrialization and cold logic, they just fell in love with the idea of a pagan past.
They saw it as a source of natural wisdom, emotional truth, a connection to the earth that they felt was being lost.
Exactly. They invented this idea of the noble pagan. And that intellectual groundwork, that idealization, is what set the stage for the modern invention of paganism in the 20th century.
With figures like Gerald Gardner, who founded modern Wicca.
Right. And Davies is very clear here. Modern paganism is a 20th century invention. It's not the unbroken survival of ancient religion. It's a new religious movement that draws inspiration from history, from folklore, from occultism, from academic research.
To create something new and meaningful for today.
Yes. And he's not saying it's less valid because it's an invention. He sees it as a legitimate contemporary spiritual response to modern concerns. Individualism, environmentalism, a desire to, you know, re-enchant the world.
Okay, so let's pull back and distill all of this down to the core themes. What are the big messages we should take away from Davies's work?
I think the first and most important one is the politics of religious definition. That word pagan, it wasn't a neutral descriptor. It was a tool, a political and theological construct used to define us versus them.
Which is such a powerful lesson for today. Whenever you hear a broad, simple label applied to a complex group of people, you should immediately ask, who created this label? And what purpose does it serve? What diversity is it erasing?
The second big theme is continuity versus replacement. Religious history is never a clean break. The fundamental human needs to connect with nature, to honor ancestors, to mark the passing of seasons, those things don't just disappear.
They just find new forms. The story isn't one religion replacing another. It's about transformation and synthesis. The underlying needs remain the same.
And third, there's nature-centered spirituality. This is something that really does set many pagan traditions apart. The emphasis on the sacredness of the natural world, the idea that the divine is in the world, not separate from it.
Which obviously offers a lot of resources for thinking about environmental ethics today. It's a very timely idea.
It is. Now, Davies has a way of phrasing these big ideas that's so sharp and memorable. We should probably share a few.
Let's do it.
Okay, the first one goes right to the heart of the matter. He basically says, paganism was an invention of monotheism. Before the rise of Christianity, there were no pagans. There were only distinct peoples with distinct religious customs.
And that just changes everything. It puts the ownership of the term exactly where it belongs, on the group that created it to define another.
Then there's the one on syncretism. The conversion of Europe was not the replacement of paganism by Christianity, but the transformation of both traditions through their encounter with each other.
Which we were just talking about. It wasn't a conquest. It was a messy, complicated merger. Both sides were changed by the encounter.
Right. And finally, his take on the modern movement, which I think is so important for providing intellectual honesty. He says, modern paganism is neither the unbroken survival of ancient religion nor its faithful recreation, but a new spiritual movement that draws creative inspiration from the religious imagination of the past.
And that's so liberating, isn't it? It frees modern pagans to be authentic to today, to draw on history without being trapped by a myth of an unbroken tradition that never really existed.
So what are the real life applications here? How can you use this knowledge?
Well, the first is as a critical thinking tool. The history of the word pagan is a perfect case study in how powerful groups define and often demonize others. So when you hear a sweeping label today, you can apply Davies's method. Ask, who's doing the labeling and why?
For anyone exploring their own spirituality, especially earth-based paths, his work offers that intellectual honesty we mentioned. It allows you to build a practice that is meaningful to you, now grounded in history but not chained to a fictional version of it.
And I think for anyone involved in, say, cultural heritage work, his method is a great model. He shows how you can reconstruct a marginalized tradition by looking at everything, archaeology, folklore, court records, not just the official written histories.
So what's your biggest takeaway from all this? What surprised you the most?
For me, it's the sheer power of language. The fact that the revival wasn't driven by some secret group of farmers in the countryside, but by intellectuals, by romantics, by high culture figures who needed to invent a past to push back against their present. The idea of paganism seems almost as powerful as the practices themselves.
That's a great point. For me, it's the reminder that history is never a straight line. Davies shows how resilient those deep human impulses are, the need to honor nature, to mark the seasons. That spiritual expression will always find a way to the surface, even if it has to adopt a new name or a new form. It shows the past and the present are always in conversation.
A constant negotiation.
Mm.
Perhaps the most resilient thing about paganism is just the human desire for that connection to the sacred earth, a desire that will always outlive any single label or doctrine.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.